coming to you from the studios of AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. This is The Gailey Show. I am your host, JP Darafagosian. We celebrate LGBTQ culture and entertainment on this show, or to put it another way, if you are looking for something queer to read, watch, or go to in Minnesota and beyond, we are your answer to that. Today, let's see, we have on the show today, we have queer actor and theater maker Janely Rodriguez, who is currently performing in the show Frog and Toad at Minnesota Children's Theater Company in the Twin Cities of Minnesota. But up first, Laura Lillibridge has a new book out, The Truth About Unringing Phones. Laura joins me now. Hello, Laura. Welcome to The Gailey Show.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
And so some trivia for folks who are listening and or watching on YouTube. A few years ago, I applied to be in the Association of Writers and Poets, Writer to Writer Mentorship Program. And somehow I got in, and Laura was my mentor. And I was thinking about it this morning on the drive into the station, how many years ago that was. But it was like 2 or 3 years ago. I can't believe it's been that long already. And Laura was a guest as well on This Queer Book Saved My Life, which that episode will be airing coming up here on AM 950 in a few weeks. But Laura, welcome, and tell us about your new essay collection. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. It is, excuse me, a book about my father primarily. My mother and father divorced, biological father divorced when I was 2 years old, and my mother went on to marry a woman, and my father moved to Alaska. And the book is about, you know, my yearning for my father and how he never chose me. And then also coming to terms with having a not really great father and, you know, allowing yourself to walk away from a toxic parent.
Toxic, yes. You were very gracious to let me read some excerpts from the book early on, which were jaw-dropping. I mean, he really was, like, I was, like, my jaw literally dropped in every, like, section, it felt like, that I was reading. Tell us about how you were thinking about, when you set out to write the book, like, what was your process of how you wanted to frame this story? Because there's a lot of material, unfortunately, for you to choose from. So, like, what was the focus, like, the angle that you took in writing it?
So, when I started writing the book, my father had dementia and was coming to the end of his life. And the only way that I know how to process anything in my life is by writing. So I knew that was my next project, was to write about this relationship. And I was mentoring, another person through AWP, and I was asking her to write every day, so I had to force myself to write. But I could only stand to write short bits at a time, little fragments, instead of my traditional longer chapters. So I found myself just sort of focusing on, you know, the sharpest memories and not worrying so much about filling in the bits in between, which was new for me. Normally, I write a more chronological story, but this seemed to work, probably because my interactions with my father were so few and far between.
Relationships as queer people to our parents can be very difficult. Were there things that you were learning about yourself as a queer person, as a queer parent, as a, you know, living in this world today and in that relationship as you were writing the book?
I would say that it was really validation to me for taking my kids away from my father. I effectively ended their relationship with him. One of my children was really exploring gender, and I felt that my father was not a safe person for him to be around at that point in time, and I ended the relationship. And as I reviewed my own memories, I was like, yeah, I did the right thing. No regrets.
I think that can be hard for some people. You know, the idea of estrangement seems so taboo. What has it been like then, the reaction that folks have been having? I know the book just released, but so far as you've been meeting readers and doing your events, like, what has the reaction been to this?
It's been very validating for me, and I've had several, strangers come up to me and say that they were mourning their own fathers, and that it was so validating for them to see someone else who didn't have a good relationship, and to say it's okay to have mixed feelings about someone. I feel like people expect everything to be black and white. And my whole life, when I talk about my father, people would say, you know, well, why do you still talk to him? Why do you even care? But it's really hard to sever that yearning. I don't even think it's a bond, to be honest, in my case, but that desire for someone who has abandoned you. And I try to make it okay for people to have that space to just say, wow, you know, they were never the parent I wanted, and I'm never going to have that parent that I wanted, and now they're gone, and that's all I got, you know? And I feel like queer people in particular are more likely to have those complicated relationships with our parents.
Very complicated. You know, I was thinking about it a lot. Like, I don't have much, if at all, communication, right, with my parents right now. And so, you know, different stories that you and I have, right, in relation to the experiences with our parents growing up. But you also had, if I may ask, you did grow up with two moms, right?
Yes.
And so do you write about that relationship at all? I mean, like, how that maybe replaced? I mean, were there things about that relationship that you found were replacing or just not being able to fulfill the relationship you didn't have with your dad?
I did not go into that in this book, mostly because I'd written about it in a previous book, Girlish. Mm-hmm. And if someone were to read, you know, several of my books, I wanted to not be too repetitive. But there is always that situation with the step-parent, and my kids have a step-parent as well, where the relationship is never a replacement for biological. As much as the step-parent may really want to be and do everything. My mom's partner, you know, went to my school, you know, performances and my parent-teacher conferences and was completely 100% as much of a parent as my mother. But it was still not the same as my father. And she was hurt by that greatly. She wanted to be, you know, just step in and become the father. And I understand that, but there's something really magical about a step-parent in that a step-parent looks at a child that already exists with all of their flaws and chooses them and says, yes, I am going to step in to this role knowing that I will be unappreciated. I mean, on my mom and Pat's first date, I threw up all over the table. Okay. It's one of their favorite stories. I threw up lasagna all over the table, and she still chose to come back and step into that role, you know? And that choice, when you say, well, you know, it's not the same, not the same doesn't mean worse. In a lot of ways, it's better because to look, I mean, let's be honest. You know, we all think our own children or our own puppies or whatever are the best and cutest ever. But for other people coming in, they don't have those rosy glasses. And, you know, so for Pat to see my brother and I with our flaws and say, I want these children to be my children, that's huge. And that is not to be underestimated. The fact that that my father donated sperm and walked away, that didn't make him a parent. And I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on your show, but, you know, what it made him was an asshole. And I think that we can hold more than one love for people in our hearts. Mm-hmm. And for me to say it hurt me that my father rejected me does not mean that I don't love and appreciate my mom's partner. Yeah. And when I say my parents, I think of my mom and Pat. Mm-hmm. I never think of my mom and my dad. Like, that's, my mom and Pat have been together 47 years, I think. You know, like, that is who my parents are. I just wish we had a better word other than step-parent, a word that truly sort of cherished that relationship instead of making it seem, you know, less than or watered down.
As a writer, what do you think that word might be? Not to put you on the spot. Come up with that word right now, Laura.
Well, you know, I hear queer people talk about chosen family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I refer to Pat, she hates when I call her my step-parent. But if I referred to her as my chosen parent, I bet she would cry.
Yeah.
You know?
You teach a lot of creative nonfiction, and if I may say so myself, you are an excellent teacher and mentor. Talk to me a little bit more about, you know, you had said earlier that the fragmented structure really worked for you in this collection because that really represented your relationship with your father. Can you talk more about, for the writers who are listening today, about that, finding that correct structure, or is correct the right word? The one that resonates the most in telling the story.
Yeah, I think that structure or form for me has been the most important thing to take my stories from just sort of ramblings, because I talk a lot by nature, into something that is clear and makes sense for other people. And I play around with structure a lot, and I do some weird things. My first book, Girlish, Growing Up in a Lesbian Home, I wrote third person, which is unusual for a memoir. And this, I wrote some of my chapters are 50 words long, little snapshots. And for me, when I find the right form, I know it. I feel exactly like this is it. This is how it needs to be. And I feel so strongly that I know that my weird choices will turn off some readers and some critics. But I also know I can't tell it any better. Like, this is the only way I can tell this story. And so then I don't mind that everyone won't like it. Because not everyone is going to like every book. But, you know, for me, the right structure opens it up and helps condense the meaning and clarify it for the reader.
For folks who are looking for that validation that they have landed on that particular structure, what are the things that they should be looking for? You know, you can feel right when you're in the draft format and you're on like drafts 8 or 9, but what are that recommendation that you have for those writers of, you know, it's working when?
For me, I always need another person to read it and say, yeah, it works for me too. And I am very lucky that I have several, you know, really generous readers who will read it and say, not just like, yes, it works or no, it doesn't, but will offer suggestions on, you know, have you tried this? Have you tried that? But I really think you should trust yourself because, you know, when you have that feeling that this is the only way I can tell my story, and your story is all that each of us has, right? So it's the most personal thing that we have. And to create that, to turn that into art and make it into something that people can hold in their hands, it has to be exactly how you want it. And then you just have to trust that the right reader will find it.
Yeah. Yeah. Share a little bit more about the title of the book. How did you get to that title? Because it's a very evocative title.
It's actually kind of funny. There was a call for submissions writing about truth. And they said the truth about whatever, interpret it any way you want. And it just popped into my head, the truth about unringing phones. Because my childhood was marked by waiting for my father to call and him never calling. And then my adulthood was him wanting me to call and me not calling him. So, you know, our relationship on both sides, you know, we're unringing phones. And I liked it. The spell check says unringing is not a word. But luckily, unsolicited press did not ask me to change it. So...
And the book cover is gorgeous too. And so the image of it so captures, or the design of it rather, so captures the title as well. So I know you're really, are you happy with the book cover?
I love it. You know, again, my press is Unsolicited Press out of Portland, and I just gave their artist free rein. I said, do whatever you want. I trust you. You're an artist. This is what you do. I'm not going to stand in your way. And her first cover, I'm like, that's it. That's perfect. That's exactly what I want. So.
Perfect. I did want to ask you a question as a author and as a mentor and as a teacher of queer writers right now. This is a very fraught moment, I guess, right? Like, it seems like every year is the, you know, every year we seem to be saying this is the year with the most anti-LGBTQ book bans on record. How are you navigating that right now?
It's really interesting because I would say the majority, okay, I would say all of my books are sort of safe. They're more on the fringes. And my manuscript that I'm shopping now is very, very queer. It's the queerest, scariest thing I've ever written about gender queerness and pansexuality. And it is not found a home. And I get really lovely rejection letters, but it's been over a year that I've been querying, and I've never had to query a book so hard. So I do think publishers Wow. are afraid, but I also know the pendulum will swing back. You know, that's the benefit of age. I see the outrage in the community, and I know that people are dying for this content. You know, so many people have never seen themselves or their family in a book. And to be able to give that to them is the biggest gift. As you know, Alison Bechdel did that for me. And, you know, to be able to do that for someone else, it's worth fighting. It's worth saying, you know, this, the truth about unringing phones, the contract was, you know, I would have to wait 2 years for it to come out. Well, you know, wait the 2 years. Your story matters. Just keep trying. Look at small presses.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there, unfortunately. But Laura, this has been so special to get to connect with you again. Tell us, how can we order your book and how can we connect with you on social?
I am Laura Lillybridge on Instagram is probably what I'm most active on. The Truth About Unringing Phones is on all the major platforms that sell books.
Perfect. Wonderful. Well, Laura, it was so great to see you again today.
You too.
Turning to theater, A Year with Frog and Toad celebrates its 21st year this year, and it's returning home to where the adventure all began at the Children's Theater Company in the Twin Cities of Minnesota. Joining me now is one of the cast members and also a member of Children's Theater Company's acting company. So please, everyone, give a warm welcome to Janelle Rodriguez. Thank you, Janelle, for being on The Gailey Show today.
Yeah, thanks. Hi, everyone.
It is so good to have you here. So tell us a little bit about A Year with Frog and Toad and your role within the show.
Awesome. Yeah, A Year with Frog and Toad, pretty self-explanatory. We go through one full year with our lovely main characters, Frog and Toad, who are best friends. And we've got three other members of the cast who play an array of characters, including myself. I get to play a mouse, a chaotic squirrel, a mole, and my personal favorite, young frog. And a bird, too.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And congratulations on being a member of the acting company. I saw on Broadway World that you got to join officially last year. How did that feel?
Oh, my God. I was so ecstatic. Ever since I was a performing apprentice here in 2019 and had heard about the acting company, I was like, man, that'd be really cool if I get to be a part of it. And then fast forward like 4 years later, Peter Brocious, he called me to his office and he made me the offer, and I was really stoked. I said yes almost immediately.
Well, it is. I mean, to acting companies are kind of rare these days. So it's very exciting to be a part of one. So congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really excited.
And you have done theater at a variety of another venues here within the Twin Cities as well, correct?
Yeah, I've had the pleasure of working with Theater La Ti Da, 10,000 Things, Artistry, and History Theater too.
Wonderful. So are there, as a queer person who is doing theater today, I feel like theater has had such a big role in, you know, raising visibility for the community, creating community within the community, right, as well. And so I like asking theater makers as they come onto the show, you know, given everything that we're dealing with as a community right now, like, what do you see the role of theater playing in building community for the queer community?
It's a bit of a tough one. I see a really big push for queer stories is what I'm seeing. I think a great example is beginning of this season, we had Morris Micklewhite in The Tangerine Dress, which is about gender expression and how there's no wrong way to do it. And I think those are the stories that we're really pushing for in the community, and they really bring us together. I know even within that cast and within that creative team, we had a bunch of queer and non-binary folks, and it was really lovely to work with everyone.
What does representation mean for you?
I think it goes beyond the story that we're telling. I honestly think it's everyone who's in the room. We can tell a queer story all day long, but if the right people aren't behind it, it will never be told authentically.
Absolutely. What do you think is important for telling stories for kids, right? You've done theater for a variety of different audiences. Like, what is the magic special thing that actors need to be bringing to roles that are specifically for children productions?
I think the main thing is that we don't talk down to them. I think we often forget that kids are just people, and we have a tendency to want to talk down to them because we think we need to do that in order for them to understand. But there's really no need to undercut anything. We just need to tell the story as authentically as we can, and you'd be surprised how much how receptive they are.
What does that feel like when the show is over? I imagine it's a different experience, right, when you've got the children in the audience versus the adults.
Oh, it's extremely different. If I had to pick, I would always pick the student matinees. They're just so much more lively and honest. I think we get that knocked out of us as we become older, and we're in the theater and we have to be polite and we have to laugh and clap when we need to, but kids don't have that filter at all, and they will laugh when they think it's funny, and they will give you their very much honest critiques in the moment if they don't think it's funny. And it's great. I love that honesty, and I love their vibes.
Do you get to interact with the students after the shows?
Not after. I think a lot of it has hindered on the pandemic. We used to occasionally come out depending on the show, and we'd give autographs and things like that and hang out with them after the show. But I think we've had to push back on that because, you know, for safety reasons. But we've been able to do some interactions with them. For Grinch, we got to go out in the sea of them. Reed, who plays Toad in this show and played Grinch when we did it, he gets to go out and interact with them and do a pie toss. And then for Alice, we also had most of the cast come in their clown base and their clown costume and just kind of play games with them, play paper, rock, scissors with them. So we've changed some things, but we're still able to interact with them in some way.
Amazing. So you hail from Florida, correct?
Yep, Miami, Florida.
Miami, Florida. How does it feel to be looking at, I mean, particularly now living in Minnesota, which is trying very, very hard to be at the forefront of queer rights and particularly trans rights and being a trans refuge, rather, for, you know, folks across the country. Like, what does it feel like to look back now at your home state and everything that's been going on there?
It's tough. I mean, it's not surprising. Yeah, I think being from, especially South Florida, a lot of people think because it's such a big city, and in some aspects it's true that we have a lot more left-wing ideology, but the fact of the matter is it's still a red state. And I know even in my little part of Miami, I would see Trump flags all over. So it's not surprising, but it's definitely disheartening to see the leadership that's there just kind of bash away at rights and banning books. And it's quite difficult to see, but there is a huge reason I don't live there anymore.
I know, right? We need a children's theater, you know, in Florida to be telling the stories that you all are telling there. Are there any roles or shows that you would love to do at children's theater?
Oh, gosh. You know, I don't know. I think the only one that really pops into my head is maybe the Tin Man. I think there's something just so endearing about someone just wanting to have feelings. I think a lot of times growing up, it's been really hard to read people and read emotions, and I heavily relate to that. And also, I feel like his movements are so interesting to work. I think that would also be a great experiment. So if I had to put my name in a hat, it would be for that.
I love that. I love that. Were you involved in the theater as a child?
Not as an itty bitty. I think the first time I ever really got into theater was in high school. And I mostly just wanted an outlet for my singing. I know I've been singing for as long as I can remember. I didn't really get any lessons, but I would just belt all around the house. Very distinctly, I remember singing all the songs from Little Mermaid from front to back, and I knew all the lines, knew all the character lines. It was great.
That turned out to be a very queer musical. Yes. I loved that.
Very much wrote that as like a queer-coded story, and a lot of people know that.
I know. I did. You know, I loved that musical when I was a kid. And then when I got older, I was like, oh my, these lyrics, it's amazing. And also to know that the character of Ursula was based off of Divine too, just all of that queer subtext, as it were. Mm-hmm. What do you think when you got into, it's a tough business, the theater and performing, when you got into it, what do you love about it? What keeps you going?
What does keep me going? Gosh, just probably the people. I love seeing other people work and their skills and the talent that's in this town. It like definitely makes me want to be a better artist for sure. Yeah, I'm such, especially in this cast, Becca Hart, Reed Sigmund, Jay Getty, Ryan Lemon-Levin, they're all such great talented artists. Sometimes I just look at them and their comedic timing and I'm like, holy, I'm not gonna cuss here, but holy, yeah. Holy, it's incredible to watch. Yeah,
absolutely. So being the Gailey show, and we talk a lot about, you know, queer culture and entertainment, is there any theater show or play or that you've been reading or TV show or film that you would recommend to folks that you've really been digging lately?
Queer related stuff, I'm assuming, or
yes.
Oh gosh, I'm trying to think.
Nothing. I know that always puts people on the spot when people ask me that question. I always blank and I'm like, I don't know anything. Yeah, literally, but I watched like 15 things in the last week.
Gosh, I think I'm only really thinking of like music artists right now, because that's really where.
Oh, I love it. Go want to hear it.
Sun is like a great one. I'm really into like R&B right now, and Orion Sun is just one of those people that's popping up and I'm really into right now. Yeah,
love that. Also, I see on go for it,
Orville Peck as well, if you're into country. God, I can't, every time I listen to Come On Baby Cry, I'm like, oh god, it's so good. Yeah, I love queer artists.
Have you heard Beyonce's new country album?
I have. I haven't dug into all of it, but I'm already here for the Jolene revisit. I love that it's in a different place.
I know. So I was looking at your Instagram profile, and you have a lot in your link tree of supporting a lot of different community organizations. And I loved that, seeing that there. So talk to me about, you know, why you do that, the causes that you support.
I know, memory serves. I know I have a few unhoused GoFundMes for certain people. I also have a link for the Okra Project. I am a huge believer in mutual aid and being there for community. Without getting into specifics, I think a lot of the systemic structures that we have are clearly not working for the community. They only work for capital and for profit. And I think divesting in certain programs and reinvesting in communities that actually help us are what's going to make the community stronger.
I love that. As we're looking to building the community stronger, what do you think is important, given your background and working in children's theater? What do you think is important in how we tell stories and create stories for kids today?
I think getting to know your neighbors. I think there's a lot of hesitancy in getting to know the people you live around. I think a lot of us, including myself, tend to be introverts, and we're really just want to be in our own homes and relax. But I think being in a bubble like that is when stories lack. I think you get more color out of your stories and of your life, and it's more fulfilling when you get to know the community that is around you.
That's so important. Thank you for sharing that. Do you have maybe plans to direct one day or to write?
You know, not anything super original. I have this idea in the back of my head that I would love to implement animated shorts onto stage. I know a big one that's always been in the back of my head is this lovely short called Over the Garden Wall. I think it would be such a cool project to put onto the stage. I love the idea of adapting something.
Yeah, absolutely. What's Over the Garden Wall? I don't think I know that.
It's a lovely short that is loosely kind of based on Dante's Inferno. It's about two brothers who get themselves lost over the garden wall in the forest. And the more they try and get out, the further they see themselves in it and the weirder things get. It's a great little 10-hour short series I would recommend to watch on Halloween.
Oh, seriously? Yeah, I was just thinking that. That'd be a good one for
this
October.
And great casting, too. Elijah Wood's in there. Tim Curry, great queer icon. Got some good ones. Christopher Lloyd from Back to the Future fame.
Oh, geez. How have I not heard of this?
It's super niche, but it was done by a few of the same people from the creative team of Adventure Time. And it came out a few years back, and it's great. Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, I'm definitely going to look that up, make a note of that. Mm-hmm. Are there roles that maybe for I don't know if I like distinguishing like adult roles and children's roles, because they're both like important, but in terms of like for adult type roles, are there any like plays that you would love to do?
Outside of the children's theater?
Yeah.
I love Venus and Furs. I think it's such a good play about sort of how men, even the most well-meaning men, tend to talk down and have this misogyny that they can't see. And I think it's the dichotomy and the sort of power balance between the two characters is really thrilling, and it's something I would love to do.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Well, so what is up next at the Children's Theater for you?
Grinch for now, and TBD on the rest.
Oh, I love that. And how can folks connect with you on social media or wherever you'd like for them to connect with you on?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram and I'm on Facebook. Yeah. Those are like the two main ones. Yeah.
Yeah. And your handles?
I believe at Rodriguez Janelli, and if not the other way around, at Janelli Rodriguez. Okay. One of the two.
Perfect. Well, Janelli, this has been so lovely. Thank you so much for joining us here on The Gailey Show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and you have a standing invite. So whatever you're doing coming up into the future, those shows, like, please come on, let us know. Come on by. We would love to have you and talk all about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to.
Well, that's our episode for today. Our podcasts are executive produced by Jim Pounds. Marketing, production, and distribution support provided by From AM 950, Brett Johnson, Chad Larson, Jennifer Ogren, and Laura Hedlin. You can visit us online. Go to thisqueerbook.com or am950radio.com. You can watch us on our YouTube channels, unless you're watching us right now. Go to youtube.com/@TheGailey Show or at AM 950 Radio. You can find us on social media. We're at This Queer Book on Instagram, and we are at @the_Gailey Show on Instagram. If you follow us there, you can see preview clips of our upcoming interviews for that week's shows. You can also find us on thisqueerbook.com, where you can sign up to be on This Queer Book Save My Life if you have a queer book that had a life-saving feature for you. And until our next episode, see you queers and allies in the bookstores.